Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to ask a question, please press star followed by one on your touchtone phone. If your question has been answered or you wish to withdraw your question, please press star followed by two. Please press star one to begin. Your first question comes from the line of Bob Cornell with Barclays Capital.
Yeah, hello, everybody. Sounds like an optimistic, upbeat presentation. You know, a lot of questions, though. For example, you know, you didn't give a review of what you thought, you know, the total loss content was across the cycle. You know, we talked, you know, maybe probably a year ago, whenever this was, about, you know, $30-40 billion of loss across the cycle. I mean, given what you see now, what would be the target for losses in the cycle, you know, beginning to end?
Hey, Bob. Jeff Hornstein. I don't know that our view has changed all that much. I think we talked before about roughly $30 to $35 billion across the cycle, and I think for the most part that's what we're talking about now.
You know, a couple of things on 2010, right? You said you thought the losses could peak in 2010, but you thought the losses would equal 2009 levels. I mean, does that, you know, suggest a profile that we run up in the first half but come dramatically off in the second half? I mean, how we you square those two, you know, comments?
No, I think you've got it exactly right. I mean, I think as we sit here today, we see losses next year looking very similar to losses and impairments in 2009. The geography is a bit different. You know, I think we talked about the fact that we're expecting real estate to be tougher next year than even 2009 was, but we've got other segments of the portfolio where we actually think losses will improve year over year. But in total, you know, order of magnitude before the FAS 167 change, we're looking at losses that want to be roughly about the same year over year.
Well, you know, then it goes back to my first question. You're looking at, you know, credit losses, you know, $10 billion this year, $10 billion next year. I mean, does that set up another $10 billion in provisions there for 11?
No, I think when we talked about 3 years, we started with 2008, not 11. So If you go back to 2008 and, you know, 2008, roughly about $8 billion, 2009 and 10, somewhere between 11 and 12 billion. You know, I think we're still in the same range we talked about both in March and in July.
Okay. Just one final thought from me, you know, pass the baton. I mean, you know, given the comments about net interest margin going up, credit losses being about the same, you know, and $2 billion of capital contribution, you know, that implies, you know, pre-tax for 2010 around break-even. Is that a fair compilation of the data so far?
Well, you've got some other dynamics going on. We think the cost of funds will be a bit better next year than they were in 2009. You've got additional cost out in the structure. And you got a little bit of a pickup, we think anyway, on gross yields based on the pricing we see today and the mix of what's running off versus what's coming on. So, I mean, we think we see today anyway, we see positive pre-tax earnings.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Your next question comes from the line of Terry Darling with Goldman Sachs.
Thanks. Yeah, I'm wondering, maybe just following up on that last question, if maybe you could put a range around the expected improvement in that kind of pre-provision, pre-tax number. You got a lot of positives there that seem like you've got some reasonable degree of confidence, and that maybe the tax piece is the uncertain part. I wonder if you could perhaps talk about a range there.
Yeah, I don't, you know, we don't give guidance, Terry, and I'm not sure we're really ready to do that. I think we've given you a lot of information on how we're thinking about next year to draw a bigger picture. We do expect, you know, the tax benefits next year to be less than they were this year because we had a couple of very specific items this year between the APB 23 reinvestment that we did, permanent reinvestment we did in the first quarter for a little over $500 million, and the UK home lending item in the third quarter. You know, we're not planning on repeating those items next year. So at the moment, as we look at it, we see the tax benefits in 10 being less than they were in 9. But we're suggesting to you that we think earnings are about the same or about flat.
Okay, and then maybe circling back to the the unrealized losses in the commercial real estate book, I guess $5 to $7 billion. I think this question gets asked on every call, so we might as well ask it again. You know, Mike or anybody on the team, where is the confidence level at this point that that number is kind of as high as it's going to go? Because obviously the bear case out there is still dramatically higher than that level, but you sound reasonably confident that, you know, at least the rate of decline relative to expectations may be moderating.
Well, this is Ron. I'll take a first crack, and anyone else can join in. I think we are trying to look at a very reality-based view of the market ahead. When I indicated that we are expecting or at least planning around a further 13% value decline into the 2010 timeframe. So we don't see this as over. Typically, real estate to recover needs employment growth. We think that's going to be quite some time before we see, you know, strong employment growth. So we think that, you know, eyes wide open, 2010, 2011 are going to be challenging years. We have to focus on real estate fundamentals, lease our properties, focus on the expense management of our properties. Thus far, through a very tough market in 2009, we've managed to maintain flat operating performance of our 165 million square foot real estate portfolio around the world, which we think is really a terrific result by the team, and our goal is to continue to outperform the market at those levels.
Okay, and then I guess a question on the ENI, the $400 billion ENI number on 2012. I just wonder if, you know, it sort of seems as if the market maybe wants to incent you to shrink in different areas than maybe the initial thinking would have, would have suggested. I'm wondering if, if there's agreement with that statement, and, you know, if so, how your thinking there is evolving in terms of the composition of the portfolio looking out to 12.
Terry, this is Mike. We spent a great deal of time late last year, early this year, and still work on it in terms of segmenting the portfolio in terms of what's going to be the future and what's not going to be. And that largely is unchanged. We are working it through both collections and some dispositions. We're a little ahead of plan, actually, in terms of where we thought we'd be. But it has not changed very much. We certainly are open to it, based on, particular dynamics. But it's very close to where we were earlier this year. And I think there's not a lot of debate around here about the ultimate target of 400. We think that's a reasoned number based on the best advice we get in terms of size that we should be within inside of GE, as well as a way to think about it from funding. So I think not much debate, not that much change, and I think we're a little ahead of where we thought we'd be in terms of moving down that path.
Thanks very much.
Yep.
Your next question comes from the line of Steven Winoker with Sanford Bernstein.
Good afternoon. First question for Mike and Jeff. How do you both see your longer-term return on assets and return on equity for the business, given the descriptions you had for the book rolling over, the different maturities you have in the business, revolving credit, and the better net interest margin evolving? So where do you see ROA and ROE going in that same 2011-2012 timeframe that you discussed?
Well, I think, see, the way we – I mean, we're not confused. Right now, the pricing market is very attractive as the market recovers. You know, I expect to see some pressure on that, but we showed you those numbers earlier. I think from a leverage standpoint, at our lower leverage in the future, we're thinking of an ROE target somewhere in the mid-teens. With that, it'll vary somewhat by product line, but of course, our leverage will be lower in the future. So. Today the ROIs are quite good, as you saw by business. Just a matter, it really just depends on how long that market lasts. But I would say ROE at the 5 and change leverage in the 13 to 15 range, something like that.
And that implies 1.5 to 2% on the ROA side?
That's right. I think that's right.
Okay. And then on the on page 25, you talk about combined losses and impairments. Can you just once again break that out in losses versus impairments for the total business?
Yeah, give me 1 second. A lot of paper. For 2010, Steve.
Yeah.
Okay, so
basically of that.
I got it. 2010. So in the base case, I think what we said in July was total loss impairments of 12.1, which included about $2.1 billion of impairments. So that's about $10 billion in credit cost. And in the adverse case, we said $17.5 billion with about $3.5 billion of impairments.
And that mix is still consistent with your thinking now?
That has not changed. No, it has not changed dramatically.
Okay, and of that, of that 2.1, about $1.5 billion, I heard from Ron was in commercial real estate.
That's right.
Okay, and I guess the last question before I hand it over to somebody else is on the residual values in GECAS as opposed to on the corporate aircraft and CLL. Could you just give us a sense for both residual values and realization in that case, and how that's affecting the business?
As you know, we go through a very detailed valuation asset by asset in GECAS. We do it at least once a year in the August timeframe. That's mostly driven because of the appraisal cycle of the three major appraisers that we use. We went through that in this past August, and I would say, generally speaking, you know, aircraft values year over year, depending on the aircraft, we're down, you know, 15 to 20%. Our portfolio fared a little bit better because we tend to be a little bit more narrow-body focused and new generation. You know, clearly older aircraft, MD-80s, 747-400s, the value declines were much deeper than that. We fortunately don't have or have very little of that in our portfolio. The total impairment we took as part of that process was less than $100 million. And as we look forward to 2010, we think that there might be a little bit of upward pressure on that versus 09, but not dramatic.
Okay. And oh, I'm sorry, one last question. I realize that there's a lot of uncertainty in the regulatory environment, but given your commentary about 2011 and particularly 2012, how are you thinking about dividends up to GE? Does that start to enter the equation at any point in your thinking again?
Yes, Steve. I think it would. You know, it's you know, we haven't been meeting a lot this week about that. I think the but as earnings return, pre-tax earnings return to the business, particularly going into 2011, then we'll take a hard look at that.
All right. Thanks.
As a reminder, ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to ask a question, please press star followed by one. Your next question comes from the line of Daniel Holland with Morningstar.
Good afternoon.
Hey.
A question for you about some of the foreclosed properties on the debt side that are translating into equity business. I'm just wondering about the relative performance of those new, I guess, new equity assets relative to your existing equity book, if you have any kind of operating metrics or anything around that.
This is Ron. I don't have the a direct comparison, but what I can tell you is, as we indicated in the prior analyst call in July, most of the foreclosed assets this year have been multifamily apartment assets. And in fact, since the time that we've foreclosed and taken ownership, our asset management teams have been able to improve the operating performance of these assets quite dramatically, and are now working, in fact, with new partners on opportunities to reposition those assets, sell the assets into joint ventures, and to continue to add value and eventually exit the assets over time.
Do you know if any of these assets have kind of trickled into that $7 billion embedded loss book, or are they kind of all sitting within the equity portfolio itself?
When these assets are marked to market when we foreclose, and so we at this point in time do not have any further value erosion in those assets embedded in our $7 billion unrealized loss.
Got you. One more question on the commercial lending side. You know, looking at kind of the profit profile of what you have out there, I'm really curious about some of the barriers that you guys might see in terms of actually being able to get out there and execute on that. Just the opportunity looks really strong right now to me.
Bob, this is Dan. I'll take that. I mean, I think we view the lending side as very attractive. Obviously, you saw the returns we're getting on the business. You know, what we have a very well-defined strike zone in the mid-market that we cater to, and we just really are riding the deal flow that we see with the longstanding corporate lending partners and sponsors we have. We've seen that pick up demonstrably since Labor Day. So we're anticipating a greater area of focus and more volume in that segment in 2010. But, you know, we'll wait and see how the market bears out. We're going to stick to our knitting and stay in our mid-market box, but we do expect that to grow next year.
Excellent. Thank you.
Yeah, it's important to note that the way we're managing the company, you know, we have red assets and green assets here, and and it's business as usual. On the green side, we're working the markets hard. We are open for business. We are doing what we can to drive new volume. So on the areas where we're in restructuring, in those cases, we have cut back quite a bit, depending on the particular situation. So most of our book that we talked about today, with a couple of exceptions, are things that we think are very viable parts of our future, and we're working that very hard.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
Your next question comes from the line of Christopher Glynn with Oppenheimer.
Thanks. Yeah, just a question back to how, you know, your vision of future earnings power is evolving here, I think. In the past, the model was $400 billion in assets with a 2% ROI. Right now, it looks like your ROI ranges are well above that. So, you know, any evolution there? And, you know, also, how did you decide, what's the thought process between how tall to make the bar charts on the left side for the 11 and 12 years?
Well, you know, actually, there's probably more work there than you know, but the but I'd say I expect pricing right now. Pricing is quite attractive, as you see in some of the examples that we're showing you. That has a lot to do with the fact that our world has changed a lot in this last year, and the competitive nature of the market is just very different. As people have either changed, maybe have become impaired in their ability to do business, or, you know, changed their philosophy around their product line. So, you know, I'm hopeful that this price environment sticks around, but I don't imagine that it will. Prices will tend to normalize over time. So our plan here, Christopher, is really to do as much of this business as we can while the market's as attractive. Now, it's not just on pricing. You know, the structure of these deals, it's a good time to be a mid-market lender in this space. But it will tighten up. So I would tell you that over any long period of time, I think thinking of it as about a two world in that area is probably the way to think about it, but not in the short run.
So thank you. And if demand is back pretty strong next year, would it make sense to extend the time frame for hitting the $400 billion target?
I would say that would be an interesting meeting if we find a need to have it. I think when you think about it, it's not like we are managing the entire portfolio that way. We have businesses that we really think of as the future of the company. We're going to invest aggressively there. We have other assets that we are winding our way out of. If somehow the opportunity, which right now is not the case, but became so attractive that we couldn't hit that number without foregoing some business that we think is attractive in what we call the greens, we'd have to talk about that. But it's not a problem that we have today.
I would just add, Christopher, although the new business volume ROIs we're showing you are very, very attractive, you know, you're moving a big mountain to get that average up, and that's what we're working on, so that takes a bit of time. The second thing is when you think about 11 and 12 earnings, you know, if the world plays out positively, if we're able to be a little bit cautiously optimistic here, you know, the biggest source or the two biggest sources of your earnings fuel here are going to be not booking $12 billion of losses and impairments, and the operating leverage that comes with taking $4 billion of cost structure out.
Makes sense. Just one last cleanup, and I appreciate all the answers. You referenced flat taxes in 11 and 12. Could you just elaborate on that a little bit?
You know, we're not making any big assumptions today about what the future of AFE or Subpart F are. And so, you know, for the moment, our long-term assumption is just the world as we know it today, and we'll have to see what happens legislatively around AFE and Subpart F. No deep assumptions there.
Okay, thanks again.
Your next question comes from the line of Jeff Sprague with Citigroup.
Hi, thanks. Just a few more cleanups, I guess, after a lot of ground covered. Just want to make sure we're all speaking the same nomenclature when we're talking net income. Are you talking net income at the GE Capital Finance level or at the GE Capital, you know, continuing net income number?
GE Capital Finance.
Capital Finance.
Yep.
And we're going to start with but on a consolidated GE Capital basis, we're thinking about pre-tax income, positive pre-tax income.
On a GE Capital Finance, today, we see positive pre-tax income.
No, but take it below Capital Finance, just down to GE Capital. You see positive pre-tax income in 2010, all in?
You know, we've not taken it there yet, Jeff. I think we're getting a little too specific on the guidance. We'll share that with you when we're ready.
Okay. That's going to be a big swinger on how people think about earnings quality.
Yeah. No, we definitely see GE Capital earnings better next year.
At the Capital Finance level?
No, or at the GE Capital level. You know, partly because we're not going to – at the GE Capital level, we spent $400 to $500 million of restructuring this year that we're not going to repeat in totality next year. So if the Capital Finance level, if we look something like we do this year, next year, and we don't spend $400 or $500 million on restructuring and a few other charges we took on our treasury book, then GE Capital we would expect would be slightly better.
Okay. And then just to follow up on Chris's question there on tax, understanding there's a lot of uncertainty, but I mean, the answer to my previous question obviously is partially unanswered here on the call. We'll see how that plays out. But unless you've got positive pre-tax income in 10, with a meaningful tax rate in 10, I don't see how you could model flat tax in 11 and 12. Is that tax rate, or are you talking flat nominal tax dollars?
We're talking tax dollars, not rate. We're talking benefits.
So we're still looking at tax benefits in 2011 and 2012?
Yes, but down from 2009 and something that looks probably more like what 2010 may look like.
Are we dipping into some tax loss carry forwards or something? I'm just, if we've got higher margins and better losses and lower SG&A in 11 and 12, don't we have much better kind of underlying operational earnings that would be causing a positive tax effect?
Well, potentially, yes, but we have the structural benefits to go with how we fund ourselves and the benefits to go with the tax-exempt and tax-advantaged investment and assets we do, and we expect that to continue, short of some legislative change. And when we look out 10, 11, 12, that's kind of how we're thinking about it.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
And our final question in the queue is a follow-up question from the line of Bob Cornell with Barclays Capital.
Yeah, more in line with these mop-up questions. You've done like $1.3 billion of net income so far this year, yet you talked about net income at like 2 at one point in the presentation and 2.5 at another point in the presentation. I mean, does that imply we're looking at a fourth quarter, profit of some significance here coming up?
G Capital Finance was $2 billion through the third quarter.
Okay.
And I think what I said for the year was between 2 and 2.5.
Okay, so we're looking at, break even to a profit in the quarter.
That certainly is what that would imply.
Okay, and then you also said that 10 would equal 9, so we're looking at, this 2 to 2.5 billion in 2010. Is that what I heard?
Yeah, best we can see it today. We expect next year profitability-wise to look like 2009.
That's what we're thinking about.
Okay, thank you.
Once again, ladies and gentlemen, for any questions or comments, please press star 1.
Okay.
Yeah. I think we've come a long way. We've gone through a lot of questions from where we were back in March. I want to thank everyone today for their time, and this concludes today's event. The replay will be available later today on the website. As a reminder, we will also host our annual Outlook Investor Meeting with our Chairman and CEO, Jeff Immelt, on December 15th. Please visit our website for information regarding this event. And as always, Joanne and I will be available for any follow-up questions that you may have today or tomorrow or the rest of the week. Thank you, everyone.